What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Donald Trump has seized control of Washington, D.C. police and is federalizing the city, supposedly in response to crime rates, but crime rates are the lowest that they've been in a decade. Joining us to discuss is Michael Cyanato, a reporter for The Guardian who writes on politics and labor. He recently reported on horrific conditions for pregnant women and children inside ICE facilities. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Kat. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much for joining us. Michael, because D.C. isn't an actual state, what powers does that leave in the hands of Congress and the president?
Unfortunately, it leaves a lot of power in the president. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why D.C. statehood has kind of been talked about and pushed. You have, you know, 700,000 residents without representation in Congress. And it's just kind of opens the door for someone like Trump to attack democracy under this false premise, like you just mentioned, claiming that crime is an issue when crime rates are at a 30-year low in D.C. And even we saw Stephen Miller tweet yesterday claiming that the crime statistics are false without any evidence. So it was completely vibes. What happened is a Doge worker, known colloquially as Big Balls, was assaulted in D.C. And that kind of incited this push to take over the police department in D.C. and deploy the National Guard and really engage in this political theater. And, you know, what we've seen from the D.C. mayor is that they're following the law. They're, you know, kind of embracing, unfortunately, the police presence. But they're, you know, she's been vocal about the fact that this is an authoritarian push, and she's called for voting in members of the Democratic Party in Congress in the midterm so that there is a check and balance to what we're seeing more and more of is Trump using the police state as political theater and really embracing these harmful and false right-wing narratives about crimes in cities, particularly ones with large Black populations led by Black mayors.
We're going to get into the race aspect a little bit later, Michael. I'm wondering, I want to tug on the thread about D.C. statehood and it not having it and how that helps or hinders Trump's objectives here. I learned something new, and so I want to bring my listeners along. What is the Home Rule Act?
I'm sorry?
What is the Home Rule Act?
The Home Rule Act? Well, it was enacted in 1973, which devolved congressional powers of D.C. to local government, and home rule. It was enacted by Congress in 1973. Basically what that does is, you know, so right now and historically, the District of Columbia doesn't have congressional representation. So they don't have statehood. It's just local government. So it really decentralizes the power in government and really gives power to the mayor and the D.C. council. So it's just a kind of a bureaucratic reorganization of the governmental structure of D.C. Even less so than territories like Puerto Rico. Congress reviews all legislation passed by the D.C. Council. It's just, the president approves the district judges. Like I said, they have no voting representation in Congress. So it's just a big limitation on local government. and you know, it just takes away their autonomy. So they're at the whims of the federal government, which you know, we're seeing that play out right now with you know, Trump being able to do this in DC. You know, he did do it in California, but there, you know, were opposition from the mayor, the governor there, and there were you know, the courts you know, pushing to pull back and push back on that authoritarian power. But in DC, you know, Trump is just, you know, pushing the limits of that power even more. We've seen the U.S. Supreme Court you know, rule in his favor, and when he's, you know, tried to push the authority of the executive branch as much as possible. And you know, this is concerning, given that you know, Trump has and his administration has voiced support for doing this, not only in DC and LA, but in, you know, he's mentioned Baltimore, he's mentioned Oakland, he's mentioned Chicago. So you know, it really is alarming in terms of the democratic aspects of this and what this means, and it really flies in the face of what this administration has claimed to be favoring small government, and you know, leaving power and authority to states when, you know, the federal government is using fake emergencies to bring in the National Guard and take over police forces.
Yeah, I wasn't going to go there, but yes, he ran on, right, a platform of small government and statehood and America First, actually, that he was going to focus his energy, time, et cetera, in this country, which actually has caused some fractures inside of his base, which if organizers are smart, they will exploit as we try to push back on the agenda that he's pushing. Michael Sainato, how many law enforcement agencies are in D.C.?
So there's the D.C. police, which is the city, and then, you know, the federal land has different police, like the National Park Service has their own, you know, type of law enforcement, and National Parks land in D.C., the Capitol has Capitol officers, you know, so there are different federal agencies. There's the FBI, you know, all sorts of police agencies, but you know, bringing in the National Guard, we saw videos being posted around over the past couple of days. They're just walking around basically doing nothing, and the White House touted some arrests that they made yesterday, which I think they were in the 20s when a typical average arrest rate in DC is in the 50s. So and, you know, they've basically been targeting homeless people, rounding up homeless people, criminalizing homelessness. That has been a project of the right-wing conservative movement, passing these anti-homelessness laws through states and local areas, you know, for the past several years. And that's, you know, very concerning. So there are a lot of different law enforcement authorities and agencies involved in this, you know, which is concerning. Because, you know, we've seen the issues with ICE and immigration enforcement and what they've been doing over the past few months. The way they've been, you know, soliciting people to join ICE using white supremacist coded propaganda to do so, eliminating any sort of like background check, you know, removing the age requirements. You know, all of this is concerning, and it's just part of a broad authoritarian push to expand the police state. You know, given the when Trump last left office in 2020, there was you know, criticism and protest about how much of funding and is spent on police and you know, police brutality and things like that, and he's really picked back up on you know, that attacking those sentiments and really using the police and this authoritarian push to, you know, undermine democracy and, you know, for show political theater, kind of ramp up his base. And, you know, it is in the context of all this, it is a distraction because he has been receiving so much scrutiny and criticism for how his administration has handled the Epstein files and, you know, the concerns that, you know, how is he implicated in those?
Yeah. The path I'm walking us down here is actually about state violence, right? Because if he's taken control of all of the law enforcement agencies, he already had control of the federal agencies. Those feds have flooded the streets of D.C. What I'm thinking about is how does that exacerbate the poor relationship that D.C. police have with communities and the people? So I wonder if you can talk a little bit about, you know, prior to this moment that we're in right now, what is the Black community's relationship? What is the, you know, poor people's relationship with law enforcement in D.C.? How common is it for cops to abuse their power and or the people?
So it certainly is common and has been an issue. You know, in D.C., it's, you know, Washington, D.C. kind of evolved as just an area where Black neighborhoods and Black communities could, you know, thrive and you know, get into the middle class by, you know, obtaining, you know, those government jobs, those federal jobs, or, you know, win through unions, good paying jobs in, you know, whether it's transit or, you know, other city services. You know, like most, like every city in the U.S., they've been subjected to, you know, different varying degrees of just racism, how those neighborhoods have been dismantled, destroyed, gentrification, you know, things like that. And, you know, in the, you know, the D.C. police, you know, like police forces across the country have been kind of geared towards, you know, attacking and focusing on Black neighborhoods and other minority neighborhoods, and, you know, over policing those areas. And in the Republican right wing, you see it on like Fox News or local conservative news. There's a lot always stoking fear about cities, about how cities are crime-ridden. This has been going on for decades, that cities are out of control and they need more policing. They need, and that's the solution, when the actual solution is those, you know, those neighborhoods, those communities need more resources. And that's what's actually been proven to, you know, lower crime rates and you know, help these communities. But it's the whole, you know, claiming that there's these wide swaths of bad people, bad hombres that need to be targeted by the Trump administration, even when the data shows that's not the case at all. They say the data is fake and that you know, the only solution is the fascist authoritarian ramping up of targeting those communities. And in D.C., it's, you know, like many cities, it's, they just want the homeless people off the street. They want to criminalize homeless people, fine homeless people, which, you know, how that's never been effective. That makes no sense. And it just really is just opening the window for criminalizing homelessness instead of, you know, providing affordable housing or services to actually help these people. It's, you know, threatening to put them in jail or, you know, just get them out of sight, out of mind.
Michael, I mean, I know organizers and activists on the ground. And of course, during Trump's first presidency, we saw the way he responded to protests, right? There are lawsuits stemming from that as well. What has the response from the activist community been over the last couple of days?
It's just been, you know, I haven't seen too much opposition, unfortunately, just given how the government of DC is set up. But unfortunately, it's just bewilderment, fear and concern of, about the president, the sense, the sets, and how this is going to play out over the next few weeks, because you know, for 30 days this is supposed to be the ramp up, and more National Guard are expected to you know, come into to DC in the coming week. So you know, it's really just a wait and see, and kind of responding to you know, whether this is just going to be just parading around these police officers and agencies in a show of political theater, or, you know, actually, you know, targeting and harassing communities and residents of DC, and just locking people up for just being homeless, or just being in vicinity and claiming that their job is done. So it's really I think everyone's kind of shell shocked and kind of waiting to see what happens from this.
Michael Cianotto, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
No, thanks again, Kat.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard, or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.